Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen's been raining off my cup. Pink via deck for most to see Kalein far beam to up. Gate mir kein's a flint. Die Tropfen.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold, and I'm your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part one of my interview with Caitlin Cook, who is brillante. She has an incredible show that she is now touring called The Writing on the Stall, and it is based on, you got it, bathroom graffiti from all over the world. She's brilliant. She's smart. She's a musician. She's a comedian. She's a writer. She's just everything. So I hope you enjoy part one of my interview with her this week. Also a member of the tribe. I am recording this on Holocaust Remembrance Day, which is so depressing. I can't even tell you. I've never felt like this before on this day. It's just what's happening is so reminiscent of the past, you know, what's going on here in the United States and around the world as far as Jews are concerned. And you know, you can say whatever the fuck you want. And I am telling you, as a Jew, it's different. It's different out there. And there is a lot of, I mean, there was always anti-Semitism. And now it's just, it's so in your face. And it's really sad. It's really sad that we have to fucking go through this every so many years. That we have to deal with this, that we think we're safe and we're never safe. And it's depressing. It is depressing, but we will survive because we've survived since the beginning of time. And nothing is going to stop us from being here. So you can protest, you can spread misinformation. You can act like no Jews care about innocent Gazans dying, which couldn't be further from the truth. And you can act like we all think alike and we all believe the same things. But here's the truth. There's nuance. People can hold more than one thought at the same time. And here's the honest to God truth. There would be a ceasefire if they would fucking release the hostages. If they would release the hostages, there would be a ceasefire. But they don't want a ceasefire, okay? And because of them, this continues on and on and on. And that is the truth. And it is fucking sad. So, you know, Passover was kind of emotional and hard. And this day, the never forget, you know, it's never forget and never again. But never again is happening right now. And it's hard. It's hard. And I want peace. We all want peace. I'm not a fan of Benjamin Netanyahu at all. And I want this to end, but release the fucking hostages and stop acting like spoiled ass. Like these people on the campus acting like they are, you know, starving and they can't get food and they need. What are you talking about? Go leave your tent and go to the fucking mess hall or whatever it's called and get something to eat. No one is forcing you to stay there, and then you act like you're the victims. I want to know who's funding this. I just want to know. There's so much I want to know, and we'll eventually find out, but not before so much damage is done. So on this Holocaust Remembrance Day, I'm thinking about all those. There were 11 million people who died in the Holocaust. 6 million were Jews. And we're not even up to the amount of Jews that were in the world before the Holocaust. Families decimated, towns gone. We can't forget and we can't let this happen again. And yeah, it's awful. And none of us want innocent people dying. None of us. But return the hostages. Return them. Okay. So that's my angry moment of the day. Yeah, it's just sad. It's a sad time. But I had a great interview with and a great conversation with Caitlin Cook, who, I mean, how brilliant is it? I should have thought of something like that. You know? No, I'm kidding. She's brilliant. There's bathroom graffiti. It's brilliant what she does with it. So she's fascinating. And I love talking to other writers, performers, comedians, and those who are, you know, making the world a better place with their art. And Caitlin Cook is one of those people. So I'm excited about my interview with her. I just also want to say that my Aunt Joan, my mother's sister, who I love, turned 95 on May 1st, 95 years old. She is sharp as a whip. We talk about politics. She knows everything that's going on. I am so lucky to have her. She has 3 daughters who are my cousins, but, you know, my mother died and my father died in 1990, and she is, you know, she is the go-to whenever I have a question about anything, and she's just amazing. So happy birthday, Aunt Joan, 95. Okay? 95. We should all live that long and have all our brain cells like Aunt Joan has. So happy birthday, Aunt Joan. Next week, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend, Ben will graduate from college. That I will be totally crying. But we'll talk about that next week. So listen, I hope this week is a good week with good news, but who the fuck knows? Oh, let me tell you where I'm performing. I, Judith Hannah Gold, I am performing. I will be in Provincetown. My residency in Provincetown begins June 23rd. I'm all through the summer at the Post Office Cabaret, which I love. It is the greatest. It's just great. I love it. So I'm going to be there every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 8:30. So that is very exciting. I am going to be performing there on June 13th because I will be there for the Provincetown Film Festival. I'm in a film that is coming out called Outstanding about the history of LGBTQ comedy, directed by Paige Hurwitz, who is going to be on the podcast. And it's all about the history of out gay stand-ups. And I'm going to Israel. I'm going to Israel on 26th, and I'll be performing all around Israel for the great, great organization Comedy for Kobe, which they run a camp for kids with PTSD. And there's a lot of new kids going to the camp. It's crazy busy. So I'm so happy to be traveling around Israel and performing for Comedy for Kobe. And all that information will be on my Insta and my website and everything. So I'll get that done. So, but right now I want you all to sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my conversation with Caitlin Cook. Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold. And today, you know I love talented people. And sometimes I'm a little jealous of them. No, I'm not. But, you know, our guest today is so talented, so original. I hate the word unique, but, you know, everything's been done in this business. And I think she found the thing that hasn't been done and has it's and will feed her for the rest of her life. Okay. Ladies, gentlemen, and they, thems, we have Caitlin Cook here today, who probably hates her name because of Caitlin Clark, but so fucking talented. She created the show, The Writing on the Stall, which is exactly what you think it is. But there's so much more to Caitlin Cook. And she is a Jew, but her name is Caitlin. What the fuck is that? Let's start with that, Caitlin.
I don't love my name. You're so right. My brother's name is Travis. My name is Caitlin. We have taken my dad's name, which is Cook. It's not a very Jewish name. My middle name is Lubo, which comes from Lubovsky.
Oh, I like that.
Which is more Jewish. Yeah, but I think...
What's with the Travis and the Caitlin?
My dad is from Texas, and also my mother and her sisters were raised like Jewish atheists because my grandma and her family and my grandpa and his family escaped and decided they didn't believe in God, but they still wanted to raise their daughters with understanding of Jewish heritage.
Yes, I read that.
Food and songs.
So your grandparents, you were raised, you say that you were raised by your parents and your grandparents. That's the Jew bell, by the way.
Yes.
It's very annoying. and that you feel culturally Jewish. And yet sometimes you say you don't feel Jewish enough.
Yeah. I mean, certainly like I never went to Hebrew school. I, don't understand some of the history behind some of our holidays. I feel like there is a hierarchy of Judaism a lot of the time. And I feel like I am the most Jewish I've ever felt was when I posted a video I was doing a song a day during the pandemic, and I posted a video about how, you know, white babies are the ugliest babies. I included my own ugly white baby picture in the song. It was just a silly song. I was doing one a day. And the most Jewish I ever felt was when a bunch of like neo-Nazis on Twitter went after me and sent me a lot of hate. And then I was like, well, fuck you. I am Jewish. But for the most part, I feel like I am very like, you know, I grew up in LA. I live in New York. I'm very like city culturally Jewish. I love Shabbat when I can go to friends' houses. I love making a lot of Jewish food, but you're not going to find me like at a temple. And in those moments around Jews that went to Hebrew school that were raised super religious, I feel like I am not Jewish enough.
But you know, Caitlin, you know, I talk about this in my act now because we're at a point again, unfortunately, where, you know, you can't deny your genetics and, mm-hmm. And I also say, you know, Hitler was never like, you know, oh my God, you eat bacon. Oh, then you go home, you know?
Yep.
So
yep.
Do you feel different since October 7th?
Yeah, I do. I feel, as I was saying with like the neo-Nazis going after me, that's when I feel the most Jewish is when I feel all of the hate and anti-Semitism. But since October 7th, I also feel less likely to talk about it in certain spaces. I feel less safe to talk about it. I feel less likely to post about it on social media. I feel like a lot of people have really big opinions on it. And I don't feel as safe
used to. And does that scare you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it's a really weird shift in which, you know, maybe it was just that I grew up in liberal cities, but I never felt any sort of weirdness or ostracism from being Jewish, except for maybe a couple times of like touring in the South where I was around people who'd never met a Jewish person before.
But it wasn't filled with hate. It wasn't filled with, you know, acrimony. Did your grandparents, you say you were raised by them as well as your parents. You've said that before. Are they alive? Are your grandparents alive still? No.
No. Grandpa passed when I was 11 and my grandma passed when I was 21 or 20.
Wow.
Around there.
Okay. Well, at least you had her that long. That's great. Did they give you any warning or, I mean, does any of this, I'm just curious. You're the next generation of me and I was surrounded, you know, by the Holocaust because it was 17 years before I was born and all of my parents' friends who had, you know, accents from Eastern Europe were Holocaust survivors. So, and you're raised with this in your home. Did they warn you? Did they, it's so interesting that they said, listen, we're not going to deal with this sort of, we don't want to make this your full identity because, and yet I find it interesting that you can't escape it.
Yeah. And I also don't think that their idea was to not make it my full identity. I think that they just saw the atrocities and all of this trauma and were like, God doesn't exist. So we're not doing that part of Judaism.
Right.
And so I wonder what they would say. Like, I wish I knew my grandpa better, or had more time with him because he was both of them were such cool people. My grandpa invented the wah pedal for guitars.
No way.
Yeah. And he wasn't even a musician. He just liked to take things apart and put them back together in weird ways. And he made this pedal and he like people started using it with guitars and it became this huge phenomenon.
Wow. What was his name?
And now Raymond Lubo.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So he has such a cool history. And now as a musician, I wish that I could talk to him and ask him a bunch of questions because I still feel like I got to ask my mom even some more questions all the time. I'm asking her like, wait, when did this happen? And how I want like a timeline. I want the whole story. And then my grandma was also really fucking cool. She was a history professor and she started a bunch of women and gender studies programs at like, local California colleges and, was a big atheist and really involved in politics. She took me to my first like anti-Iraq war rally.
Wow.
She was just really, really well-spoken and intellectual and
cultured.
Cultured and really inspired me. And I wish I could also have more conversations about what's happening now with her, because I think she would have some really interesting things to say.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I know.
One of my like earliest political memories, other than like her taking me to a bunch of like rallies, was I remember her saying, "Communism is a good idea, but it will never work. And also don't let anyone hear you say
right,
that."
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
She sounds like brilliant. Oh. Brilliant. Wait, so yeah. Do you tell everyone about the wah pedal?
I do tell most musicians. It feels like it's part of my legacy, and also like I don't use it a lot in my own music, and I would like to incorporate it more. I'm more of an acoustic guitarist, but I would like to incorporate it more. And I also feel like sometimes I don't tell people because it gives them the sense that like I have a ton of money from legacy actually he didn't put this like he didn't put a good patent on it. And so like it's not like I come from a ton of money. So sometimes I feel weird about the connotations of telling people that. But I do really enjoy telling like pretentious gearhead guys at like Guitar Center and stuff that I know where I come from and what I'm talking
about. That's the best. Do you get a discount for the,
I wish, yeah, I know. I wish I got a discount, but I do get cool stories from a lot of different musicians and people.
So. I love that. Love that. Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV, because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it. And so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out. And what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor and I love them and they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
I wrote this down. I was doing research on you. You've said that being Jewish, and then we'll get off the Jew thing, but you know, I'm a big Jew. I feel like, you know, we have to Jew it up now because everyone's afraid to Jew it up. But,
true.
That being Jewish, part of being Jewish, is finding deep meaning. And
yeah,
I loved that. I love that because we're taught to question everything. We're taught to argue about everything, to find mm-hmm. different ways of thinking about the same thing. And yeah. your entire show is about finding deeper meaning. But yet, I feel I've watched snippets of your show and I'm so sorry I missed it because I want to see it so bad. But the fact that you see something. So for everyone mm-hmm. listening, the writing on the stall is about graffiti in bathrooms all over mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah.
Men's, women's, mm-hmm. non-gender, every bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way you do it is that you and music, which is, you know, I was a music major. I love music. And I think mm-hmm. music and comedy, mm-hmm. I know you've talked about music and comedy. I've heard you speak about it. They're so similar. It's all about timing and mm-hmm. pace and rhythm and
yes.
that you mm-hmm. interpret these writings on the stall and mm-hmm. yet you allow the audience to interpret them for themselves as well. And I just love that. How the fuck did you think of this? Because it's brilliant.
Thank you so much. I'm really proud of it. And also it doesn't feel like it's all mine. You know, that's what I love about Found Art is like, yes, I created this show and it's really personal and vulnerable and it's my story, but it's also a bunch of people's stories and it's interactive with the audience. And it just comes from like, I do think part of it is the lens that I found this is through being Jewish and being taught to not just let the things we're looking at skate over us, you know, to think deeper about the things around us and to question them. And also, I studied art history in undergrad and grad school. And one of the first pieces of graffiti I saw, which is actually the first one in the show, I saw it in Chicago and it said, "Since writing on toilet walls is neither for critical acclaim nor financial reward, it is the purest form of art. Discuss." And wow. I just loved that because at the time I was studying art history and I was really getting frustrated with how pretentious and bougie that world is and the world of high art. And I saw that and I was like, that's a beautiful idea that graffiti is so pure, especially bathroom graffiti, because it's not, people don't do it for money. Right. People don't do it for fame. People don't do it even to get their name out
there.
They're
at their most vulnerable. Exactly. They're taking a shit. They're peeing. They're naked. Yeah. But they're
crying. They're doing drugs. Right. Like they're doing. Yeah.
But it's private. Yeah. But it's also really private.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really private, and it's like, and it's anonymous, and I think most of the people doing it don't even consider what they're doing art. They don't consider that they're creating something, and yet it's a little peek into that person's life and a little peek into like this human experience that we've been doing this since like the cave painting days. We've been scribbling something next to like clearly the shithole, you know? And so it's just this beautiful art form that I think is so easily dismissed. And I just got really fascinated by it. And I have so, so many pictures now. I started photographing it. And then I've always made music and comedy, and I love a found art song. Like I have a couple songs actually, in which all the lyrics are things that my friend said when she was sleep talking. She sleep talks a lot. And like, I love taking things, that don't seem like art or that just seem silly or that people don't pay attention to. And if you throw it into a comedic and musical context, suddenly people listen, sit up, suddenly they notice. So I made the first song of the show, which starts with that piece of graffiti about art history. And I made that first song and God, people just sat up when I started playing it. It got standing ovations. People's eyes just lit up. And I thought, I'm clicking into something here, because hasn't everyone seen something in a bathroom stall and thought, that's funny, or why did someone write that, or what's their story?
Right.
And so I then ended up like going through all of my archives and being like, you know what, I think I can write a whole musical out of this. And I started sorting all the pictures into categories.
Yeah, that's what's so cool about it, that you mix and match. I can't imagine how much time that must take.
Yeah. And I'm actually like, the general plan for the next eventual project is like, this is a solo show. It's just me up there. It's me in a toilet up on stage because the show is set in a bathroom. But eventually I would like it to not just be me up there and to incorporate other people's stories that they're writing on the stalls. And so the eventual plan is to take, an even larger now, archive of bathroom graffiti, because people DM me hundreds of pictures a day, and build out like an ensemble show of a bunch of people's interweaving stories from the world of bathroom graffiti.
That's amazing. So you grew up in LA.
Yes.
And you went to college in Ohio.
Yes, I did.
And you studied art history.
I studied art history and photography.
I have that down here. And then you went to, I mean, talk about snob. If my daughter went to Oxford, I mean, mm-hmm. I would be telling every, you know, I mean, my son plays basketball and I don't shut up about it. But were you freaking out that you got to go?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always had, before Oxford at least, I had some kind of complex about appearing dumb to people or like wanting to have some kind of check mark by my name. Cause I grew up in LA.
It must be really hard.
It feels
in LA.
Yeah. It's a weird place to grow up. And it feels like, especially for girls, you're taught that your value is your looks,
right?
And you're taught that really early on. And in LA, your friends are getting discovered in malls and becoming models and actresses. And like, I just think I knew pretty early on, I was like, that is not my value system. And that's not what I want to bring to the world. And certainly I'm not getting discovered in malls.
Also,
so,
you have this amazing grandmother who is so the complete opposite of that. What part of Los Angeles did you grow up in?
I grew up in, I think the real estate agents now call it like Beverly Grove.
Oh yeah, I know
where
that is.
But it's right between the Grove and the Beverly Center. Yeah. And then my grandma had this beautiful house in the Hollywood Hills that they built, which is so lovely. That doesn't exist anymore. So sad.
How did they end up
there?
But
yeah, I'm
sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. They grew up in New York, actually. Their family's obviously emigrated from Belarus and Poland, but when they were very little, they grew up in, my granddad was in the Bronx and my grandma was in the Jewish tenements in the Lower East Side. Mm-hmm. And I believe that I gotta ask my mom, but I believe that in their like early 20s, they both just decided, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get away from my big families. I gotta go west.
Right.
And so they both ended up in LA. It's so funny because LA is such a silly place, but they found a vibe with the city. And
right.
My grandpa was able to make it work as an inventor. My grandma was able to work her way up as a professor. And they lived there ever since. And like all three of their daughters never really left. And it became their home. Whereas, me and my brother went up to the Bay, but like I was the one who was like, I'm going to Oxford.
Yeah.
I'm going to Oxford. I'm going to New York.
Right.
I'm going to Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. And your father's from Texas?
Yeah. My dad grew up in Texas. And when he was in his early 20s, he also was like, I got to get out of here. It's too like Bible Belty and religious, and I'm going to go to LA. And he's now he's like a restaurant manager, but back then he was a chef. And so he made his way to LA. And
did he cook at home?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he taught me how to cook so much stuff, and is such a fun chef too. Where I learned when I was young how to like crack an egg open with one hand, and like how to make pancakes in the shape of the letters of our names. And he was great. And he met my mom at like a dinner theater place because she's a choreographer dancer. So she was doing dancing and waitressing, and he was the chef bartender.
Oh my god, I love that.
So. Yeah.
Oh, that's like
very
a rom-com. Okay.
I know.
Hey, everyone. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them.
Fast-growing trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast-growing trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but fast growing trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces. But I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew. The space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome. And so you're growing up in this environment that objectifies, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, yes.
And doesn't, yeah. Looks, and do they not? I mean, I grew up on the East Coast and I know like being smart was very important.
Yeah.
Did they not value that? Sort of intelligent, like I, the one reason I loved bringing up my kids here, my mother grew up here too. And she was, and we grew up, I grew up in New Jersey, but she was always like, oh, it'd be so much easier to bring you up in New York. You know, the thing about growing up yeah. here is that if you're weird, if you have some weird, there's something, there's someone weirder than you. Mm-hmm. There's a group you can join with other people who were yeah. are weird like you. My son was like, you know, I was bullied. I was always like, if you see any child being bullied, you go. And she's like, mommy, no one cares. Mm-hmm. No one cares if you're tall or you're gay or blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so were you like ashamed of that? Or did you hide this intel or did you use it as a,
no.
I mean, I can't even imagine growing up around that. I'd fucking kill myself.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was also interesting because like my best friend and I met in preschool and then we never went to the same school again. But she went to like the premier prep school. She went to Harvard Westlake.
Oh, yes,
she ended
I
up
know
going
that.
To yeah. MIT. She went to Harvard Business School. So she was always very intelligent. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So she always made me feel very seen in pursuing being smart. But I went to like the public schools and the magnet schools. And yeah, I just felt like I just wanted to get out so early. And I felt like I was a quiet smart. I wasn't like raising my hand in the front of class. I was like, if I can get really good grades, I can get the fuck out of here. So I like did, I kept my head down and I did my shit and I wrote songs quietly in my room and I like developed debilitating stage fright when I was
yes,
in high school and was
that.
Like, I'll never.
I read that.
yeah. I was like, I will never get on stage. Right. That's not my life at all. and then, yeah, when I turned 18 and I applied to so many different colleges, cause I was like, get me out of here. I really didn't vibe with LA and it's taken me years to like figure out how to go back there and visit family
right.
and feel like it's not hell on earth and like,
oh God,
it's better now.
You know what? Oh, I love that you just said that. I felt like that yeah. going home too. And, it's gone. It's over. You know what I mean? That
yeah.
baggage is, you know, lost at some fucking airport
yeah.
and you don't need to ever find yeah. it.
Yeah. So, God, that shit stays with you. So, for, I mean, still, I'm for 61. So I'm 61. And yeah. I hear the words Bigfoot or Sasquatch, and I still get a stomachache. You know, because that's all I heard every day. Yeah. And I would didn't walk by a schoolyard till I was in my 30s because I was so afraid they would start, you know, but it goes away. You're so great. Okay. So you're on the cusp of cell phones of
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you feel like you'd be in a different situation had you had access to a smartphone when you were younger?
A little bit. I'm grateful for the time I grew up in that, like, I got to have the childhood of playing in the street till the street lights came on and then going home. And then cell phones started to become a thing in like the beginning of high school, but it was still just like basic texting. Right. And like, I remember like AOL, you know, Messenger and stuff like that, AIM. And then it wasn't like Instagram and stuff. Facebook was in college. Instagram was right out of college. Right. Like, I think there was an interesting trajectory that I feel like I'm grateful that I had each one every step of the way where I was mature enough to handle it.
Right.
And yet at the same time, like, I grew up with parents that really wanted me to like learn how to deal with boredom and be creative and not just be in front of a screen.
Yes.
Which I'm so grateful for. Like, I was only allowed like 1 hour of TV or computer a day, and it had to be an educational thing. And that continued until I was like in the middle of high school. I didn't have cable.
I love you.
We didn't play a lot of video games. Like, I do love that. And yet I wish I had, maybe, I don't know. It's still hard. I wish I had like a little more access when I was younger to maybe like getting more comfortable like filming my songs or like recording stuff and putting it out there. Like, I think that there are some people from the early days of YouTube that like have these beautiful, successful, wonderful careers because they caught the thing at that moment.
No,
And yet at the same time, I'm doing the creative content thing now, and it's sometimes working and it's sometimes a fucking burden. And you, like, having your livelihood be in the hands of just like these little internet fiends is like not great. So at this, like, when I do look back on it, I'm like, I'm grateful that things happened at the time that I was the right age for it and that I had the childhood.
Yeah, you had that experience because I love that you said the thing about being bored. It's like that kids do not know how to be bored. And that's how we created shit, was that we were bored. Yeah. I'd go downstairs and play the piano, or I'd play my clarinet, or I'd go outside and, you know, or I'd go to my room and make believe I was Barbara Streisand. You know, like, it was...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But... You know, that is so important to be able to create and know what being bored is like and being comfortable with being bored.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom is such like such a creative person and such a like, oh, you want to do that or you don't know how to do that? Let's figure it out kind of person.
I love her.
That like she is great. And like she taught me how to silk paint and do ceramics and... she's just an incredibly like creative visual person and theatrical person. And so like when I would come up to her and I would say, hey, I'm bored. I remember this as a kid. She would be like, there's a closet full of board games in there if you're really bored, but there's also like, look around the house. Is there like a space that doesn't have art in it? Is there something you want to create? Being bored was not a good answer to life. And so even now I'm like, ugh, it's so hard right now. I'm balancing like the show and a day job and all of the life things. And I'm struggling to find time to write songs, which is my favorite thing to do in the world. And it's what I did whenever I was bored. And like, yeah, things just fill up and we have screens and everything to fill our time. And it's good. It's good to be bored. You make stuff when you're bored.
I can't believe you still have to work during the day, but I did that. I did that until I
don't have to.
You're very responsible.
I did when I took the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're a responsible human being. Thank you so much
for listening to part one of my conversation with Caitlin Cook. How brilliant is she? Part two is next week. It's even more brilliant. I can't even tell you. I love talking to her. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel and edited by Colin Schmeling. And we are going to be rebranding, and you're going to hear the new name soon. Yay. We're doing a live taping of Kill Me Now on June 9th at, the Comedy Cellar in Manhattan. It's actually at the Village Underground, and we are going to have the Good Liars on, and it's going to be great. It is at 3 p.m. at the Village Underground on June 9th. Get your tickets. I'll have all that info on my website and on Instagram and all that shit. So that's happening. Yeah, that's it. I wish everyone an incredible, incredible rest of the week. I'm thinking positive, even though that is against everything in my body, but I'm trying to. And I just want to thank you all for being loving supporters of the podcast. I was in Rochester this past weekend. What great crowds. I had so much fun. Thank you to Comedy at the Carlson. The people there were just great. The club is great, and it's always nice to have to, you know, work for nice people. You know what I'm saying, baby? So thank you all for listening until the very end. And I love you all. And as we always say, so long.